thank you to our sponsors, Digital Magic the Gathering Online Card Specialist, CardHoarder.com, and MTGOTraders.com. And also thank you to our paper magic specialist, GondaPlaid.com, along with Cape Fear Games, a online card store and brick-and-mortar card store. You can find us each week on MTGCast.com, StarCityGames.com, TCGPlayer.com, MyMTGO.com, and MTGSalvation.com. Hello and welcome everybody to a special Monday Night Magic episode 213. In order to help celebrate this nearly July 4th Independence Day podcast, I am being joined by Eric from St. Louis or Mr. Suitcase. It is awesome to have you back, Eric.
It is great to be back. I got a Ricky Hayashi, one of the judges from JudgeCast.
Well, I thought you were about to say Ricky Henderson.
No.
Got a rookie card this weekend, Tom. It's awesome.
he was giving me a lot of trouble about not being on Monday Night Magic for several weeks here. So I'm like, look, I'm sorry. I was on vacation. I was literally out of the country. You know, I pulled a Tom. I was out of the country for at least two weekends, and then on the third, on Sunday, I was driving when you guys were recording. So,
and you have to just randomly quit though for about a week too at some point to really pull a Tom. That's what I'm done podcasting. I'm never coming back.
You know, I may not quit for a week, but you know, I may take some more time off. I'm pretty exhausted from this weekend.
Yeah, people don't realize how much of a diva I really am when I'm not on the show. It takes a lot of pruning and preening. And, you know, Tom, you're going to do a great job today, like before we start recording, to even have me show up.
Well, you know, Tom, the thing is, that would be really difficult if you sucked, but fortunately, you are very good and very good to work with. So
yeah, thank God I play Magic like, you know, a couple times a month. You know, keeps it real.
That's probably like the funniest thing about the hosts of Monday Night Magic. We are very passionate about Magic. We really enjoy Magic. We really love to play Magic, and yet we get to play maybe a combined 4 to 5 times a month, you know, if you don't count the pro people.
Yeah, so if you take like Conley and Gavin, and Jack probably, he's in the middle, where I bet he plays.
Yeah.
He sounds like he's playing at least probably a couple times a week. But I'm not like Conley, who spends every night till like 3 a.m., you know, drafting on Modo.
And Marcel sounds like he does a lot of Modo stuff, so.
Oh, true. Very true. And Marcel will be joining us back next week. His computer was really in the throes of dying, so needed to be drug out, you know, chained to a tree and, like, you know, basically beaten to death with a stick. So that's being done right now. So he should be back next week with a newly functional computer, and we'll, because people love Marcel on the show. Marcel's fantastic.
Marcel's got a sweet, sultry voice, and he adds some fresh perspective on things. It's nice.
Yeah, it was just fun to have him go from being a listener to, you know, calling to the show a lot and then having him come on as a host. It was just a really fun way. And somebody else I want to meet whenever I go to California, since I've never actually been there.
He's out in California?
Oh, sorry. Yeah, Oakland.
Oh, sweet. Okay. Well, hey, you know, we're spanning the time zones. We've got you and me in the Central. We've got Jack in the Eastern. Conley in Mountain. And Marcel makes on the West Coast. Is it Pacific time zone? I don't know.
Could,
California.
Could be Pacific, sounds right.
So, that's pretty sweet. You know what else is pretty sweet?
Non-magic content on a Magic podcast?
StarCityGames.com open series. That was pretty sweet.
Yeah, so Eric, I do is I'm going to sit back. I'm going to be looking through my deck. I'm going to talk about this week. I'm going to let you talk about your just weekend of Magic gluttony.
Yeah, so, okay, Weekend of Magic Gluttony started Friday. Finally, get a call from Conley, and he goes ahead and tells me, yeah, it looks like I'm going to be in about, you know, looks like we're going to be in about midnight. I'll call you in 5 or 6 hours, and we'll chat again.
And we're giving a homeless guy a ride. Is it cool if he also stays over?
I don't think any of his friends are homeless, but he did have three cohorts in tow. Bear, Coon, and for the life of me, I don't remember the third guy's name. Phil was Coon, and was Bear the tiny guy? I don't know, man. It's
I
hard
hope
to keep.
Bear was the tiny guy. That would at least be ironic.
I think he was.
And, hi, I'm you know, Bear.
So. You know, so anyway, it's like fine. That's fine. I have space. My family's. my family's in Florida, so you know I don't need to tell my wife that I've got inviting people over I've never met before, and my children aren't in the house, so I don't have to worry about you know strange people,
potential
you know.
Safe, potential like sleepwalking, other potential weirdness.
Yeah, well, I mean, listen to some of the stories Conley tells. You know, these stories are not things you want to involve younger children to. So,
Eric, that is a very smart parenting choice you just made right there.
Yeah. So anyway, with the family in Florida, it's like, okay, well, since I got some time to kill, let's go play some Friday Night Magic. So I go to Friday Night Magic. I win my draft pod. I get a nice elvish visionary with the boob job.
Oh, you got the boob job. Okay, good way to go.
Yeah. Huh? And some packs.
Did you enjoy it more than like a flatter elvish visionary? Wait, no, I forget. You're the other. You're more of a back end guy.
You're a back end guy. Yeah, I like the top end. I'm a top end.
Oh, okay. I had you mixed up. We had this discussion, I know, a couple of weeks ago. But...
Yeah. Although legs are good, too. So, anyway.
At least one.
Regardless of all of this, I enjoy having the Friday Night Magic foil just for added trade incentive. Not to mention, you know, I do like the Elves deck in all of its incarnations, all the dirty combo. So, you know. I imagine it'll probably be finding its way into that deck. So anyway, I start off the weekend right, and then you know I want to be podcasting from the Open Series, and I don't want to have to email Tom, you know, like 50 million files. So I get
Thomas also appreciates that.
Thomas hooked me up so that I can do some posting while I'm here, and I needed to test that process out. So I decided that to test it out, I needed to put together the ever elusive, ever long promised "What's in Eric's RSS Reader, Mr. Suitcase" episode. So
hopefully
mind you,
Tom will listen to this and not ask me to fill out the show notes every week. Yeah. Tom be like, Eric, there's nothing happening this week. It's gonna be a slow week. I was like, Tom, did you put on these 18 items that I found? I'm like, no, I didn't, Eric, actually.
Yeah, I, you know, it used to be I read a lot, and now I skim a lot. There's no way someone can read all the things that I have in my RSS. You know, I a lot of it's looking at, oh, hey, this title looks interesting, I'll read that, and the rest of them, yeah, I can't skip over.
Yeah. Like, ooh, world's rarest animal. That sounds awesome.
So, yeah, so I was at Mr. Suitcase number 15 with that post when I put that one up. I am now at Mr. Suitcase number 22, and I still have three more podcasts in the can that I need to, very loosely edit and then post up. But it's probably not happening tonight. That's probably happening tomorrow after Cube Draft. So what happened in between Friday Night Magic putting that episode hurriedly up and right now, being Sunday evening around 9:30 Central? Well, what happened was the StarCityGames.com Open Series in St. Louis. Now, it says it's in St. Louis. It was really in Collinsville, Illinois, which is... It's about an hour away from my house, so...
Is that like an entirely different state?
It is a different state, but it's kind of within the St. Louis area.
Still seems kind of big.
It's over the river.
That'd be like having something in Minneapolis and saying, oh, it's actually in St. Cloud, guys. Only about an hour away.
Yeah, that is kind of like it is, except Collinsville is much smaller than St. Cloud.
Really?
Yeah. So, and apparently, I guess they had a good convention or a good rate or whatever. So anyway, that's where I plan on heading. So around midnight, I touch base with Conley and I'm like, hey, dude, where are you? Almost here. And he's like, I'm in, Columbia, which is about 2 hours away. And so I'm like, okay,
he's like
don't wait up.
Strip clubs in Colombia, but I'm not sure.
No, actually, the strip clubs are in Illinois as well.
Okay, good.
But no strip needs. Club action for Conley on this trip, and I can elaborate why some more there. Anyway, here I am. He said, don't wait up. I'm thinking, good, because I didn't plan to. I tell him to call me on my house phone, not my cell, because I need to charge it. And I go to sleep, get woke up about 2 o'clock with him and his crew rolling in. He's got 3 other guys with him. And we, you know, so I get them set up, and everyone's going to sleep, and wake up the next morning, get ready to go. And we all, I'm like, hey, you know, if someone wants to ride with me, that's fine. You know, I got, you know, space. My car's a little bit bigger than what they've driven. I do not have the minivan with me. Minivan is in Florida. No, I have a RAV4. So, and kind of like, I think we can all squeeze in. You mind driving? Will we throw you some dollars for gas money? I'm like, sure. So, we squeeze Conley in the front seat, not such a problem, and the other 3 gentlemen in the back seat. Sorry, it was Conley's idea. And then we go ahead and we get to the venue, and you know, we get to the venue, and the Star City guys, you know, I'm like, well, I got to figure out, you know, who I need to talk to. I emailed Bill from the Starkington Post to get going, because he does all our coverage, to find out what I need to do, and he told me the folks to get in contact with over there. So I went ahead and excuse me, and I got to talk with head judge Jared Silva, and he also works in Star City Games event coordinating department. And I got to work with him to, you know, find out what's up. And so he told me kind of the ground rules and how things were. And really what the ground rules amounted to was if Bill Stark needs to talk to somebody, you just need to let Bill talk to that person instead of you talking to them. And, you know, work with Bill otherwise. So that was pretty easy, because Bill said, basically, you can do what you want to do. You know, there's, you know, I'm going into their building, and I'm, you know, I'm essentially and going to their event. So, of course, you know, I'm definitely wanting to make sure that, you know, it's all on the up and up and all cool with them. I'm not going to obviously come in and be bad-mouthing them on my coverage of their thing, you know, right then and there, if there's something, you know, that, you know, for just for that sake or whatever. But I can honestly tell you, sitting in my own office, that they did a wonderful job of running the event. And so I concentrated on not playing, didn't play at all on the first day. I concentrated on getting interviews and talking with people. So I think you have in the show notes pretty much all the stuff that I posted live. I tried to get as close to live posting as possible. So I did a bunch of interviews to start off with. At the beginning of the day, I got to talk to Rashad Miller from GG's Live, and Rashad was able to prove to me throughout that day that he is in fact a very nice guy. So Rashad, I hope you heard this, and shoot me an email about that.
Was there talk that he wasn't a nice guy, or you were just surprised?
Well, the thing is, Rashad is also a very charismatic man, and I think his my original thought was that he's just so charismatic that he has convinced people that he's nice, but enough people have told me, and I've witnessed Rashad's niceness, that yes, he is actually a nice guy, although he does have some tendencies to try to do things to convince people to do things that I just aren't right. Like, I don't know if you knew this, Tom, but Set and Scout, that is just like Werebear.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And also just like Tarmogoyf. Just.
Are you trying to convince me of this, or what am I supposed to be doing?
No, that's what Rashad was trying to convince me when he was trying to convince me I needed to play some Set and Scouts in Legacy today. So, but
I'm not buying it. It's not bad, but I'm not buying it.
Yeah, I didn't quite buy it either. But no, Rashad's a really good guy, and I got to speak with him. And then so like some of the other folks who I got to speak with who weren't necessarily like players, I got to interview Pete Hoefling, who's the I guess the president of Star City Games, and also got to speak with the head judge for the day, Jared Silva, and you know, then got to interview a bunch of pros. So throughout the day, I spoke with Sam Black, Pat Chapin, Brian Cowell, and Conley Woods, and I got to interview Jerry T for a little bit. And then kind of rounding out what I did is I got to talk to Bill Stark. And then the guy who ended up winning the Standard Open for me yesterday, Joey, he plays in my cube on occasion. So, yeah, and so I kind of was following where he was at during the day. And at the end of – it was a 9-round tournament. So at the end of round 8 – I got to talk to him, and he's like, I hope that I'm going to be able to draw into top 8. And so I was like, well, hey, would you mind giving me an interview? So I got to talk to him ahead of time and go ahead and find out, you know, what he was thinking, what his matchups were, what he was playing. And he, by the way, he was playing a mono-red burn deck, and the big tech out of the deck would be that it's not running the Devastating Summons combination of cards. It's just, it's kind of more the old school red burn with Hell's Thunder and Hellspark Elementals and Ball Lightning and just a ton of burn. So he ends up drawing in the last round with David Saylor. Now, it was probably a – it was definitely a risky move in the fact that they were in fifth and sixth spots. Now, Joey was in fifth, so he wasn't sure if they were both going to get in. He figured he'd get in if Saylor didn't. They did the math, and he felt okay with it. And fortunately, those two guys made it in at spots 7 and 8. So from the seventh spot, Joey came back and – just burned his way through the top 8 to take down the trophy and the points. So he's now qualified for the Open Series championship. They automatically qualify for in the top 4, but he's qualified with one bye right now, and he's probably sounds like 6 or so points away from a second bye. So that's really cool for him, and I'm looking forward to seeing how he does there. Then, you know, after top 8's over, I go and collect Conley and his crew, who went out to go eat dinner while I did some roving commentary on the top 8. So, from like the time they announced the top 8 until the end of it, I kind of did. I want to say Otwell-inspired commentary, you know, kind of, and between, you know, Otwell and Rich Hagen kind of style stuff. So, you know, going ahead and recording, you know, the announcements on the tournament as far as the top 8 and kind of some of the announcements by the judges. I think it's pretty interesting to listen to how the judges are talking to the top 8 competitors about what's expected of them and how to behave. And that's on there. And then I do some Rich Hagen-esque kind of commentary on some of the games that I'm watching and try to do that and my thoughts of things that are going on. So, we'll see how that one goes. Now, that Aaron, one was posted first thing this morning.
Let me just – I just wanted to interrupt you quick and ask, what did you use to record your various interviews and other coverage of this kind of when you're in the field, you know, on the game floor doing this?
I have a little Sony – recorder. It's actually plugged into my laptop right now, which is in the other room. And is the packaging in here? I don't think so. Maybe the I don't have any of my documentation in here on what the exact brand is or whatever. But it's one of the ones that's like available at pretty much most of your stores, your Best Buys and whatnot. It was a Sony. I think it's a Sony. And that was it. I didn't get a mic. I didn't do anything else. That's what it was. So the only issue that I had is that I know that we post up a 44 kilohertz bit rate or whatever on a recording, right?
I usually try to if possible.
Yeah. And I couldn't get it to do anything but a 24.
Oh, that's
so
cool.
Yeah, I mean, it so, well, and there's your technical talk, folks. So, you know, but I was like, look, I'm sure that if a push comes to shove and I need to try to figure out how to fix this, I can try to fix it later.
No, you are safe from Papa Bear on that one.
Yeah, I know. When I did post the first one, I did press the little play button on the player to make sure that I could hear it through my computer.
Did it sound like Alan Chipmunk?
It did not sound like that. So I'm like, yeah, well, okay. At least it works for me. Yeah, so, you know, now the funny thing is, so you'd think I'm at a big venue, you know, I've got Star City Games permission and all that kind of stuff. I'm going to be at the venue. I'm just going to be posting stuff left and right. That's going to be awesome. And not so much. I end up going to a couple different locations trying to find some place to get some free Wi-Fi, and finally found a Panera Bread. But to get my first episodes posted, it took me like a 2.5 hour time frame that I was away from the event site to go find some place to get the stuff posted. But once I found out my spot, it was all good. And I posted up the last thing I was talking about this morning before we left for the site for Legacy. And I posted up a couple more episodes around 1 or 2 o'clock. So in those two episodes, I interviewed Ricky Hayashi, and then I got to interview. No, I did some game commentary a la Rich Hagan on the first round. So that's kind of what's there, and then in the can, what I'm waiting to edit is an interview with Joey Mishpiel, who won the Standard Open. I did an interview with him about winning at the top eight and kind of going through things and how things played out. So I have that I'm going to get to put up after I loosely edit it, and that'll probably go up tomorrow. And then I got just some other commentary, got to meet some listeners and stuff like that, so some more flavor stuff.
Oh, okay, cool.
Put up. And then the last thing I got was what's going on live for us right now would be the Legacy Open and their top eight. One of their top eight competitors was a 13-year-old guy from 13-year-old kid from Independence, Missouri, Nick Marriott. And Nick was kind enough to sit down with me before the top eight. He ended up being number one in the Swiss and got into the top four and then was eliminated in the top four in a Merfolk mirror. Oh. So, and then in actually right now in the finals, so I'm sure before the show's over we'll have the results of the Legacy Open, is Josh Gibault and Alex Berticini. And Alex is the points leader in the Star City Games Open right now. So he's looking to be Player of the Year. And I don't know if you know this, but the Player of the Year for the Star City Games Open Series, they get a full set of unlimited power. So,
well, that's pretty good.
Yeah, that's sweet. I would like some unlimited power. But, you know, yes, all Eric wants is unlimited power.
Yes, I was about to say, that doesn't have to relate to magic at all. I just want to make people do what I want them to do.
No, so I don't think I covered Legacy as strong as I covered Standard. And part of it was being tired, and part of it was not knowing the cards as well, and part of it was as people got eliminated from the event, they pretty much left the event hall. And I know some of the pros came back right around the time for the finals, just a little bit before that, like the last round or whatever. But I was busy packing up by then. I did get to play a bunch of EDH while I was there, though. I got to play 3 games at EDH, none of which I won, but all of which I had a good time in. So,
was there any discussion from the Legacy side about the, as of July 1st, the new banning/unbannings for Legacy?
With every pro I talked about the bannings and the unbannings. So I think the general consensus, well, it was a mix. There's a mixed bag on what people think about whether or not Mystical Tutor should have been banned or not. Some people are understanding of what it's doing to the two top decks, Reanimator and, I want to call it Teps, but it's not, Ad Nauseam Tendrils.
Yeah.
And then some folks think that those decks weren't dominating enough to warrant the banning. So, you know, what I always found interesting is the fact that Wizards seems to be trying to push a mono-brown environment. So, I think some of the things that were interesting for Legacy were I really liked the deck that Sam Black, Pat Chapin, and Brian Kowal were running. It was a control deck with Crucible Worlds, Wastelands, Jace the Mind Sculptor, Mishra's Factory, Sensei's Divining Top, Counterbalance, and then the really spicy card, Predict. So you top, put your top three cards back in whatever order you want them to with the worst card on top, cast your Predict, that card goes into the graveyard. Oh, now you get to go draw your next two cards. So thin your deck of cards you don't want, draw two for like a mana or two.
I mean, yeah, for blue and a colorless.
Yeah, it was sick. I got to watch Pat Chapin he's in a game three and he's, you know, in a spot and it's a little challenging and whatever, and then he hits Predict and does this and then gets a Jace the Mind Sculptor out and now has a couple counter spells, is predicting and mind sculpting and then fate sealing himself, putting cards on the bottom of his library so they're out of the way of what he wants. And then all of a sudden, Jace is up to like eight counters and his opponent has happened to attack Jace, except that he's now having problems and he's getting wastelanded and his cards are getting bounced and his stuff's getting countered. And all of a sudden, Jace is at 12 and then he has four cards in his library and that's the game. And all this is happening with like 15 minutes left in the round. Now, the deck does look like it's pretty slow, so I don't know if a 50-minute round structure, which is what they had there, is too rough to finish it on time. So, and no, those guys made the top eight, so you can, but it really looked really cool. Nick Marriott, he was running this Merfolk deck, which generally when you think about Merfolk in Legacy, you think of, the kind of more controlling fish build. You got Merfolk, you got maybe some Meddling Mages and that kind of stuff. No, this is really pretty much beat down Merfolk. He did have some control with Force Wills and Dazes, but it, for the most part, it's Lords and Dudes and just get there.
Well, that's old school fish then.
Yeah, it's really cool. His games did not go long, and matter of fact, when GG's Live puts up their archived footage or whatever, I definitely recommend watching the quarterfinals match, where, I mean, he just takes apart a copy of Conley's deck, played by somebody else. So Conley had a pretty spicy brew with some Phyrexian Dreadnoughts and the green Hideaway land, and then probably my favorite card in his deck would be Form of the Dragon. So, and he has a deck tech up on Star City about that. So,
very cool.
So, yeah.
So it sounds like, Eric, you had a pretty good time at the Star City Games Open in St. Louis. Or was it actually, what did you call it? Was it Legionville? What's the name of the place?
In Collinsville, yeah.
Collinsville.
Yeah, and found out what the name they want it called is the StarCityGames.com Open Series. So
StarCityGames.com Open. I can write that down.
Yeah, so that was good stuff. And I tell you what, I mean, you can tell that, and I think I found this, I think you find this as you go to your high-level magic events, like your Grand Prix and your Pro Tours, too. I mean, the stuff is really well-run. You know, it's professional, it's smooth, they keep things flowing, and the judges know what they're doing, and really make a concerted effort on getting everything to fire off the right way. And you could tell how smoothly run it was, and what it was really, really, really fun.
Now, besides EDH, did you get to play in any side events or anything else there while you were at
Well, the first, I only played one side event. I played an EDH side event, and my generals, their decks are not tuned for a competitive EDH. And I don't really like competitive EDH, so
that's my question. Like, what was it like? Did you enjoy it, or you're just like, this is not what EDH is to me when people are going for crazy infinite combos? Or
okay, I'm gonna have to. I'm trying to remember the name of the general that the guy played, and there was only like the one guy who played it. He's an MTG Cast listener, though. Hey, guy, who I can't remember your name now.
This doesn't make you love us more. I don't know what does. I don't know your name, and I'm about to badmouth you, says Eric.
Well, okay. In all fairness, he's on one of the podcasts that I'm going to put up, too. So his general was, there's a blue card that essentially lets you tinker. You tap it to
try
tinker.
Arkham Daxum.
Yeah, Arkham Daxum. There you go.
That's the one that Jack's been playing. I tell him that he's a jerk every time he tells me that.
Yeah, well, this guy doesn't pull it out in casual games, but he said the first day that he was playing at the EDHQs that they were filled with people who were playing generals like this. Essentially it's Tinker, but you have to sack an artifact creature, and you can't get an artifact creature back. So there are some limitations. But the killing blow was Mycicon Lattice, which turns everything into an artifact, and then there's an artifact tripwire, I think it is, that you pay to and tap it, and then you tap all other artifacts. So that pretty much locks you out of the game. He did Mirror Incubator, where you pull artifacts out of your thing to make mirrors, and then had Arkham as a memorial out as well. So you had flying, boosted up, vigilant, hasted mirrors that were going out to beat people down. Yeah. And after he did that, then he tapped all artifacts. So, it's not like you're doing anything on your turn. So that was pretty mean. I realized that I should have employed a different strategy. I was kind of spreading the damage around. I should have just gone straight to trying to kill him. But,
and this, I'm sorry, I'm ignorant on this format, Eric. And the EDH for the side events, is it always one on one?
It's four man.
Four man. Okay.
So we had four generals out there. We had the traitor to mortals, the black guy, black ex general.
He's another
from
one.
From Kamigawa Blacks. I can't remember his first name. I think it starts with a K. Traitor to Mortals is his kind of title.
Yeah, MAGA.
For a legend. That's
another butthead one.
Yeah, well, he didn't get to be butthead enough. He wasn't quite fast enough. And that was being portrayed by Bob. He's one of the guys who actually drafts in my cube as well. But, it's a competitive cube, so I understand what he's doing. Then one of Phil, one of Conley's buddies who came in, he was playing Somebody of War, the green, white, blue Bant person who you guys can keep pumping up to put counters on her.
It's a like a 2/2 flyer that I can keep bumping.
Yeah, exactly. And then I had Olshath, the Hate Seed. So,
Nice.
But yeah, my deck just didn't get enough lands to start off with.
Did you see any Omnaths running around? That's one that some people have been playing with.
I did not see any Omnaths, but I played with the same guys pretty much all the time. We roped a couple more guys in and played a 6-man game. And just so that you're aware, if you're playing EDH. Conley apparently has a state-based effect attached to him. That is, once Conley arrives, two generals are eliminated by a state-based effect. Conley was gathering up his crew to leave, and two of his crew were in the game. So Conley got there, and one of his guys was using my Olshat deck, which was absolutely going off, which was just sick. It always does that when I'm not playing it. I'm feeling very unloved by the deck. So they had to leave. So it just left the four of us playing. And then everyone switched off their douchebag generals to like more legitimate generals. And then we played one more 3-man after Bob walked off. So, but it was a good time. And, I had some fun. I got to be a major threat and then get eliminated, a couple times, which... it's kind of my motif in multiplayer games.
And I found a kill switch is that artifact that taps all the artifacts.
Yes.
I couldn't remember the name either. It was just killing me.
And my mind is like Swiss cheese right now. They did have, drafts were, the standard day, there was a lot more side events firing off. I mean, they had drafts firing off all the time on the standard day. Legacy Day, they had about, the hall was only about half full of people. But they had good numbers. They had like 392 for the standard open, and then 100 and 190-something for the Legacy Open. So pretty good numbers, a bit much better than St. Louis had last time. So I'm hoping that we'll see more St. Louis events. If it comes within an hour and a half, 2 hours drive of you, I definitely recommend attending. And then if you have discretionary income to do fun stuff like that, I would definitely recommend checking out one of these, you know, either the Open Series tournaments here, or I have to imagine that the TCG player tournaments probably have just about the same kind of feel to it.
Kind of similar.
I mean, the prize pay structure is going to be good, and I think their attendance has been good as well. You know, these things are as close to a Grand Prix as you can get, you know, without playing in a Grand Prix. And, you know, even if you go just to, you know, look at the stuff they got for sale, to trade with other people, and to go play in the side events, it's a lot of fun. And I think one of the things you find is that a lot of the pros are still really approachable if you're polite to them and are respectful. And if they're involved in a conversation, they're working on a deck or playing or something, you know, give them their space. But other than that, you know, I got to see, you know, folks interact, you know, really politely. They signed anything people brought up to them, and always willing to talk to someone about, you know, advice on how matches went and whatnot. So,
very cool. I mean, thank you for sharing us about the time that you had there. It sounds like it was a blast, and I will certainly try to find any that ever come nearby where I live.
Yeah, you got one coming up the week after Nationals.
Yes, which is something that will be pretty cool. It's almost a little too close together, though. That's the problem.
Yeah,
it's like,
well,
like 2 weekends, you're like, oh.
I did hear about the fact that it was an accident that Wizards scheduled Nationals on the same weekend as the Denver Open Series.
That's what I kept waiting for them to move Nationals, to be honest.
Yeah, I don't know that Wizards is going to move. I think your Star City event would be the one that would have to play to chicken out. You know what I mean? And the way I understand booking stuff in Denver, and mind you, I didn't talk to Conley about this, but I think I've heard about this before from like Jin's Playground and Magic School Bus back in the day, that, you know, the convention centers and the spots to go to get your big tournaments there are book pretty far in advance. So I don't think they had a lot of wiggle room to move. My guess is that with Wizards having booked whatever venue they booked in your neck of the woods there, that they just can't get out of the contract and change it by the time they've announced it.
Oh, okay.
You know, I mean, the mistake probably wasn't in the announcement. This mistake was probably in the scheduling of the venue. And then once you're locked into your contract with the venue, that gets very expensive to change.
Now, Eric, I want to shift our sights towards a little bit of M11 talk. Not only do we have a couple of new previews to talk about, including one that we have been predicting for about the past month, which has come true, so we're going to pat ourselves on the back. And also, you put this on the show about some really interesting speculation from the Mana Pool guys about what we're thinking is going to be a change to the combat rules for M11.
Yeah, so I wasn't able to get on Monday Night Magic because we record on Sundays, and I've told you those conflicts. But when I got back in town, I was able to hook up with the Mana Pool. They record in the middle of the week, and it just so happened they had their pooled spoilers, and so we were looking at their pooled spoilers, and then they recorded an episode following their pooled spoiler episode that I was on. Now, that episode's not going to air for a few weeks. Their posting schedule, you know, is what necessitates that or whatever. So Mike, who is kind of, they refer to him as the rules guy. He's been playing for quite a while, and you know, he pays attention to the rules. So he's the guy in the group. You know when you're playing your casual group, there's always the guy who pays attention to the rules.
Yeah, the rules lawyer.
Yeah, well, not necessarily the lawyer, but there's always a guy who actually knows how things work. You know, and he's actually interested in how the game actually works. You know, and so Mike is that guy for the folks on the Mana Pool. You know, so when they have a question about how something works, they ask Mike. Well, Mike is reading the reminder text from Greater Basilisk, and he says, you'll notice that this doesn't talk about dividing the combat damage, you know, up amongst creatures. He says, I think that means that you're not going to have to order blockers anymore.
Thank you, Jesus.
So I want to get I want to be very explicitly clear what Mike was saying and what I and I think he's right, and I'll go into detail about it in just a minute some more. Okay, what he's saying is that of the M10 rules changes to combat, there were several. One was taking damage off the stack. We're not saying that damage is going to go back on the stack. We're saying damage will stay off the stack. It'll be something you'll get. You'll pick out how your damage is going to go. There'll be, and then, you know, people have their opportunity for effects, and then all damage is dealt, and there is no, you know, if your creature has been removed because of how you, you know, that it's not going to deal damage. It's not floating out there waiting to resolve like it used to be. That's still saying the same. What we're saying is that right now, if you block, let's say I'm attacking with a hill giant. I got a 3-3 coming over, and you have 3 2-2s. Currently, Tom says 2-2 number one's going to get in front. Tom says, I'm going to block with these 3 2-2s. So then Eric would say, okay, I'm putting the first guy first, the second guy second, the third guy third. I now deal 2 damage to the first guy and 1 damage to the second guy because that's the way blockers are ordered. And if I want to follow that up with a shrivel, then the second guy is going to die from getting the -1/-1 with 1 damage already on him. And the third guy is going to live because he gets a -1/-1 and that's it. What we're saying is that you're going to be able to change it back to the old way you kind of assigned damage, and that I could go 1 damage to the first guy, 1 damage to the second guy, 1 damage to the third guy. Okay, we deal our damage, and my 3-3 dies from taking 6 damage from your guys, and then I cast Shrivel after combat, and all your guys die. That kind of play is going to be enabled because you'll be able to split up your damage anymore. Now, here's the old reminder text from Acidic Slime. And it's actually printed on the card this way. I looked at some of the dealer cases this weekend just to double check. And that is, creatures dealt damage by this creature are destroyed. You can divide this creature's combat damage among any creatures blocking or blocked by it. Now here's the new reminder text, the text featured on Greater Basilisk. Any amount of damage this deals to a creature is enough to destroy it. And you notice it doesn't say anything about dividing it. And that's because Death Touch, under the M10's rules change, was the only time you could divide damage however you wanted it to. That way they weren't really changing the functionality of Death Touch, you know, when they made the rules change. Well, if you don't put that reminder text in, I mean, the important thing about both of these cards is these are both commons from M10, or M10 and M11. So at the common rarity, you want the most descriptive, on a core set, you want the most descriptive reminder text. And because they've taken this out of that most descriptive reminder text, you know, on a common Greater Basilisk, it really feels like they're going to change the way combat works. So now, of course, the first thing you're going to do when you think combat's changed is you go check out the rules document that's attached to the M11 site. Well, that's the M10's rules document. The date that's associated with that document is from the M10 change. The reason why that is there will be a rules announcement when M11 is about to go to pre-release. You know, you always remember that on each pre-release, you know, before each pre-release, there's a rules announcement that Mark Gottlieb puts out. And he goes and details how all the rules are changing and what things, you know, specifics for the keywords that are coming in and all that kind of good stuff. So our speculation is when that rules announcement comes out, you're going to find out that damage now is able to be assigned however you want it to be assigned, and that you don't have to order blockers. So that is our hypothesis.
Yeah, and I think a lot of ways it makes sense. That was one of the rule changes in M10 that seemed like it made the game more complicated as opposed to making it more streamlined, and also just seemed very unflavorful for Magic. Instead of having this battlefield where I have these creatures and those creatures, I have to like put them in this weird order and they just see the guy from them fall down and die before they take damage. It's like, this doesn't make sense to me.
Well, and if you look at one more piece on that, and that is, I think this is more skill testing. You know, this allows you to learn another trick and to be able to be trickier with how you apply your damage. You know, and it puts more decision making back in there without it being overly complicated. So
it's not bad. I mean, I just want to say kudos to the Manipool guys for a very interesting observation of what we've had so far of the M11 cards.
Yeah. You know, it's one of the great things about you're exposing yourself to a bunch of different input. You know, you get to hear all these different things. So,
and I mean, the one card that I was referencing before is Mana Leak has been confirmed for M11. So,
yes.
All of our talk for needing a 2 casting cost splashable counterspell, we said, hey, Mana Leak would be great, or we take miscalculation without the cycling. Boom, we're getting Mana Leak.
Yes, and you know, if you want to hear my comments on Mana Leak, listen to the Manipool's spoiler show, where they got to release this as part of the pooled spoilers.
And we have Eric. You know, we were talking about this before. We do have our exclusive spoiler. Will be coming out on July 2nd.
And and it is so spicy.
Yes, and I do want to apologize to Jessica, who is our PR connection for Wizards of the Coast. Because I saw all these spoilers going up from all the pooled spoilers and like Star City Games, so I emailed and said, I just want to say, hey, you know, looks like we got missed. Is, you know, did I do something wrong? I mean, who knows what I've said when I'm babbling? We've been talking about revenge crabs and all types of stuff. I'm like, we may have crossed that line where they're like, hey guys, yeah, we don't want to be associated with you anymore because you're really dirty. We're like, you know, I'd understand that. And then of course she responds like, you know, of course not. The spoilers actually, the previews come out in these different like waves, and of course the next day is when we were due to get our card sent to us. So I felt like a monster butthead that day. And this was second where I should have been emailing to say thank you, because we got a gift pack in the mail with some arch enemy stuff to give away.
Yeah, I saw that, and it's a pretty cool t-shirt.
Yeah, so that is, we'll be talking about that when we get to the MTG Cast News, is that we got this very neat arch enemy t-shirt, and also the red-green dragon arch enemy deck to give away.
So what size is that t-shirt?
It is a large.
Oh, okay.
And I am, unfortunately, not a large guy. I am into the small category, so that's why this shirt is getting... Otherwise, I would have kept it, to be honest. I would have kept it and not given away if it fit me, but it's just a little bit too big for me.
Yeah, and I think a large is going to be too small for me.
So. It even has stuff on the back, which is kind of cool, which I did not show in the picture.
Otherwise, I would definitely call dibs.
You call dibs. Tom, whatever the contest is, my entry wins. I'd be like, you are correct. Because on the front, it has a little, kind of looks like the stuffy dolls with the pins in them. It says, it's going to take more of you than that. Then on the back, it just says, I'm your arch enemy. Kind of in that hand scrawl.
That is so sweet.
It's just a nice shirt, too.
Yeah.
So we'll talk about how we want some giveaway ideas, but I'll probably just announce one to give away. I have that. I have the t-shirt, the Arch Enemy deck. I have an M11 intro pack. I also have one of the paper Duels of the Planeswalker packs. So actually, we have at least 4 gifts to give away.
Nice. So you have an M11 intro pack?
Oh, sorry, M10. I was saying M11, that would be awesome. But no, like,
and you haven't cracked it? You cracked that puppy open.
Yes, I did. I've been sleeping on the cards every night. For you, Eric, so, any of like the most recent previews have you really excited? We have the functionally reprinted. It's called Time Reversal.
Yeah, that has me kind of excited.
Which is it's Time Twister for 2 extra mana.
Yeah, I mean there hasn't been. I mean I think Evan Irwin hit it when he talks about the fact that there hasn't been a draw 7 in Standard for a long time.
Because every time they do it, it goes horribly awry.
So I don't necessarily think it's going to go horribly awry. I mean, for a very similar mana cost, you have Time Walk in Standard right now. So although it'll be fun to see those two in a deck like your Turbo Land that's in Standard right now.
Let's see, what else did we have? Squadron Hawk for the Birds players out there. That one pretty excited. The 1 white, 1 color should get a 1/1, or is it a 1/2 bird? Excuse me, let me find it here.
It's the Howling Wolf Bird.
Yeah, it's a 1/1, but you can go pull out the other 3 birds, which I like.
Yeah, that's a pretty sweet card. I don't know that it's going to be of a high enough caliber to make it in Constructed, but I mean, it is a draw 3 essentially. You know, you get, I mean, the 3 you get, you know exactly what they are, but you know, discard outlets, you know, maybe.
And it seems like the EDH players, I got pretty excited when I saw Crystal Ball. Just a 3 colorless artifact, 1 tap, you scry for 2.
I got excited about Crystal Ball too. And first of all, the flavor is a home run. I mean, Scry and Crystal Ball, they belong together. You know, so that's one thing. That's an awesome card, yeah.
And I hope they just totally rip off and use the old Icy Manipulator art. That's just what I'm thinking.
Yeah, I don't think it's going to happen. As a matter of fact, I know it won't happen, but I think even if it could happen, it probably wouldn't.
Douglas Shield would be like, hey, I want some extra money then.
Yeah, exactly. I think the pay structure was slightly different back then.
Let's see. And those are kind of the big things. I just wanted to say, hey, a Mana League's coming. We've had some cool previews. We know Sun Titan's going to be the pre-release promo. And the one that I thought for a casual player, this, I don't think it's going to be a tourney card of any sort. I mean, some of the Esper decks, you kind of look at it, is the Steel Overseer. It's a two-colorless mana. It's a rare. It's an artifact creature construct. So I'm getting another construct for my tribal decks, which has me excited. It's a 1/1. Tap, put a +1/+1 counter on each artifact creature you control. So not crazily overpowered, but seems like in a casual artifact creature-based deck, this can be fun. You have lots of ways to untap artifacts. It just seems like a fun card for that deck.
Yeah, you know, and what goes better with artifacts than +1/+1 counters?
Yeah, and then you have counters that you can move on to other things. It just seemed like a well-designed card that's not going to break any format, but is a fun card that I would be excited to get out of a pack. And then later on, when they're $1 rare, I will get them 3 more of them.
Yes.
A couple other news bits. We went through the big ones. At E3 this year, which is the Electronics Expo, it's the huge video game orgy of the year, is that we saw a little bit more information about the upcoming Sony game, which is Magic the Gathering Tactics. This is a turn-based game that I'd say most people which have viewed the page are a little meh about. People haven't been that unbelievably excited for this. But supposedly coming in fall of 2010, it's going to be on the PC and PlayStation 3. And you can actually see a link to the actual game's website, which is MagicTheGatheringTactics.com. You can actually take a look at some of the screenshots. And you can see it's hard to explain. It looks like there's sort of a top half and a bottom half of the screen, with the bottom half almost kind of looks like more of your cards or your spells. There's a mana pool on the right-hand side. And the top is kind of this funky sort of 3D view of the world where you battle enemies.
Yeah.
You played online.
I'm not really excited. Although, you know, I'm still the guy who doesn't have Duels of the Planeswalker, even though I can get it for PC, so.
Yeah, and that's something we'll actually be, I'll just say now, we got a code, so thank you again, Jessica. We got a code for a full copy of Duels of the Planeswalkers, which I'm going to be using. And then we're going to be putting up a full video review where if you haven't looked at Duels of the Planeswalkers at all yet, we'll play for about 10-20 minutes, sort of like the quick looks on Giant Bomb, just so you get an idea of what it's like, if it may be worth it to purchase for you.
Yeah, and let me know what you think about the Steam interface as well.
Oh, you mean Steam for like buying games, or Steam interface for the game itself?
For buying games and the interface on the game itself.
Okay, well, actually, I played the beta for Duels of the Planeswalkers on Steam when they were kind of coming up to release it.
Okay.
And you can play if you have a 360 controller, you can play with a 360 controller, just right there. But otherwise, the interface to me seemed very easy to use because it's mouse and keyboard, so you can just click right on the card, so it's probably even easier than using a controller.
Nice.
And,
okay.
And personally, if you are a person that plays any sort of PC games, I have found I will almost always not buy a game unless it's on Steam because it's just that much easier to buy games, and then in the future, if I ever get a new computer or something happens, I don't have to find discs or anything. I just log in and boom, my games are there. They automatically update themselves. For me, you can't ask for much more.
Okay. I've had a very limited interface with Steam. They have a free Portal game. The Portal game was either free for a while or is free now. I'm not sure which. And I heard really good things about the game. So I downloaded it, and I played it one night, and then I haven't gone back to it. So
if you kind of sit down like a couple of times, you'll get sucked into that game.
Yeah, that game seems really fun.
It's, you know, it's a first-person 3D puzzle game where if anybody hasn't played Portal, the premise is it's an incredibly simple premise. It's a first-person shooter, so all you see is like your little gun, and all your gun doesn't shoot bullets or anything. It just shoots portals where it can shoot a red portal or orange portal or a blue portal. And all they do is when you put the two portals is that they then connect each other. It's like, if I walk through the blue, I'll immediately pop out wherever the orange one is. So
and
with
vice
this
versa.
Very simple mechanic, they just have made these unbelievably cool, devious, wicked puzzles in this game.
And momentum carries through the puzzle. Through the portals. Very, very fun in that regards.
And if you are kind of, maybe like for you, Eric, if you're looking at getting into Steam or checking it out, this is the perfect time. They actually have a week-long special going on where every day they have daily specials where pretty much all the games are like, of their selection are going to be 75, 80, 90% off. Then they have huge discounts off of collections of other games. Like today you can get Civ 4 for $5.
Really?
Yeah, and I bought Xenoclash, which is this indie, weird first-person... It's not a first-person shooter, it's a first-person like fighting melee game where you're basically like, beating people to death but in the first-person perspective.
Yeah.
For like, it was when it first came out, it was like $15 or $20. It was $3.75, I think. So it's gotten down to the impulse buy level for a lot of these things.
Well, that's very cool. Hey, you know something else that might be cool?
What's that?
Premium Deck Series lines.
Yes.
I think there's a new one coming up.
So what we have is, as you said, and this actually, Aaron Forsythe mentioned on his Twitter feed, it sounds like he had a big part of this. He was very proud of it. Is we have the Premium Deck Series. It's called Fire and Lightning. So this is the Premium Deck Series, so all the cards can be foil. The first one that we've had so far is the Slivers one. We do not have a deck list yet. It says, what will this deck bring to the table? No lists or teaser cards are provided, but the spoiler text uses loaded words like baked, fried, and burned down. If they want this deck to basically immediately be worth like $50 to $75, they have to have Chain Lightning in it. If they give me a Chain Lightning, people are going to go just apeshit for it.
Is Chain Lightning on the reserve list?
That is an excellent question, which I'm going to look up while we talk.
Okay.
Because the reserve list is something that I cannot remember off the top of my list now.
Yeah, I know. I don't think Chain Lightning was a rare, but you can't really predict rarities for sets back then. I mean, it's just the rhyme and reason for rarity is just baffling on a lot of those sets now. So
and, it is not on the reserve list for Chain Lightning.
Awesome. That's good. So, you know, you might be able to see Chain Lightning then. So I'm very interested to see what's in there. I'm not a Premium Deck Series kind of guy. Slivers didn't really do anything for me, so I didn't do that. But we'll see what burns there. Yeah, it's obviously a best of hits of burn. So,
yeah, I think this one might do it. I think this kind of does it a little bit more for me than the Sliver decks does. Because this I can see people buying to using cubes and other things, or just using in their legacy and extended and potentially standard decks.
Yeah.
Where Slivers was a little bit more of a niche. Because there's not going to be a lot of decks you're just going to throw a random Sliver into.
That is true. If you pretty much want to be building a Sliver deck, either EDH or casual.
What else do we got? PTQ Chicago, we just wanted to say congratulations to David, I'm going to butcher this, Gleisher, for winning.
Okay.
I'm not going to say much more about it, but I always want to say, you know, congratulations to the people that win. And this is kind of playing the bant with Bane Slayer, Knight of the Reliquary, Sovereigns of Lost of Lara, the Eldrazi Conscription, along with, you know, roughly $300 worth of Jaces.
Now, in the StarCityGames.com Standard Open this weekend, there was one of these lists that made top 8 that also put in red for Cunning Spark Mage and the Basilisk Collar.
That's such a cool combo. I mean, Basilisk Collar is cool, but when you start throwing in a prodigal sorcerer into the mix, I think that's really awesome.
Oh, yeah. Now we're old school.
Yes. To me, that it just tickles that little bit of inside where you're abusing a Timmy.
So, national side events have been announced. So the full list, Mana Nation provided a full list of stuff that was there for the nationals side events. I think that's being read by Legion Events, I think.
I actually want to get your viewpoint on this, Eric. You mentioned that you played in the EDH, you know, side events at the St. Louis event. Is this the only, I guess, widely played competitive format where Wizards is not the one that is controlling the rules body? Where technically the reserve list and the ban list, the ban list and the rules are being controlled by an outside group of people?
No, I think you find that in some Magic the Gathering online formats, too. Like, I think before Pauper became really big and a qualified format, you had people organizing that as well. And so I think it's more common on Magic the Gathering online than in real life. But, I mean, there's Cube, which, I mean, you know, everyone controls their own Cube. And, I mean, so some things like that. But probably it's probably the biggest.
That's the only thing. It's pretty cool that the DragonHighlander.net people are still, you know, kind of keeping this, you know, Eldragon Highlander, I guess, pure in my mind. So it seems at some point we're going to hit this fork in the road where we're going to have the DragonHighlander.net people kind of keeping going as the casual format. There's going to be this off fork to help maybe address some of these very powerful generals, which are maybe kind of perverting the competitive format.
Well, and I think what you see here is that, you know, this is a casual format. The reason why it's being sanctioned as a side event, you know, at these different events is because it's so popular the way it is. But, I mean, you know, you have people who are definitely, you know, once you put a prize on the line, you know, people change their attitude about the game. So my recommendation is, you know, the best thing about that probably is the fact that if someone brings in their you know, for better word, douchebag general.
Kill them!
Well, the good thing is, like, okay, so if they bring that, they probably have brought some other decks too. Because I think that for most people in the format, you know, not Jack, but most people who play the format feel bad when they play a general like that and they crush people who weren't playing similar things, which means that you just have more people around who are playing EDH. I mean, like what we did is, like, we got crushed, and then the guy's like, look, I have other generals that aren't like this. I don't generally play these except the, you know, the prize is on the line, which I can respect that. You pay your entry fee. You want to get the prize. That's cool. And then we played, two or three more games of casual playing, you know, where everyone played generals that were fun, and it went more like a normal EDH game. So, you know, by having these things at events, you have more people who are, you know, going to bring their decks out to go play, so you have more of an opportunity to play with new groups and whatnot.
And next we is Eric, who is our master of all Magic news, was able to dig up the Magic Online 4th of July celebration. It's starting July 2nd, they'll be running a selection of 64-player premier drafts throughout the holiday weekend. It says, due to the popularity of these events, which is, that's a pretty bold thing to say before it's even started, we will schedule three of each event to begin concurrently. And they have basically block drafts for pretty much everything you can imagine.
Are these Nixtix drafts?
I am not. It says entry fee is 15 event tickets.
Okay, so the reason why these are special is you don't have to get the product ahead of time. You just have the tickets in your thing. So these are probably products that they're not selling anymore.
They will provide the product for
these. Okay. Yeah, so they're probably, a lot of them are probably for products that aren't out there anymore, and that's why they're really popular. They've done these things in the past.
So it's a way to get basically three old packs. So this would be cool. You could potentially join it just to Rare Draft, theoretically.
Yeah, oh, without a doubt. I'm sure people do.
Okay, cool. That actually, to me, makes more sense, as that would even suggest somebody like me who doesn't play a lot of Moto Drafting to maybe check it out.
Yeah. You know, and then I guess the one more big news thing is that Grand Prix Nashville has been moved to November 20th and 21st. And the reason why it was moved is that the Gaylord Opryland Resort and Convention Center was damaged during the flooding that happened in Nashville. And it's still in a bad shape, and so they need to give them more time to get everything under repair and finished off that way. And this should do that.
Well, it's cool that Wizards is kind of sticking with that convention center to, as they rebuild, to have people still be there. So I can imagine when these places are damaged and these natural disasters that their businesses are just destroyed afterwards, too, as everybody cancels and finds different places.
Yeah, and Wizards is staying in the same, you know, the same area. So, you know, the folks who live in Tennessee and Nashville and, you know, in the surrounding areas, you know, they have an opportunity to travel to another Grand Prix. And, you know, the time may have changed some, but at least you get to go ahead and still get the event in your area.
Now, Eric, since you, like you said, you've been gone for about a month from Monday Night Magic, we've changed it a little bit where kind of instead of decks of the day, is you can talk about a deck you're playing right now or a favorite deck that you played in the past. Did you have a deck off the top of your head that you wanted to talk about? Otherwise, I have mine in my hand.
I see. You know, I will probably say I'll go with Ulshat the Hateseed, my EDH deck. That seems to go really well for me or for other people when they're playing against me. I've really just kind of filled it up with either, you know, those hybrid or gold creatures that are both red and green, because Ulshat's a red, a green, and two for a star-star creature where star is the number of green creatures and the number of red creatures in play. So it counts red and green creatures twice. So it's set when it comes into play, I guess. It gets plus one counters for each of those. So it's, I guess, a 0/0, not a star-star. I'm just rattling off the top of my head here instead of being a real man and looking it up. And then has two other abilities on it that it gets to. You can pay a mana, and you can either ping a creature, or you can pay a mana, and you can make a green 1/1 sapperling. So, you can just pour your mana through it and wipe the board, or pour your mana through it and create more sapperlings. So when you cast it again, you now have like doubled powered Ulshat. And then what's really good about the Hateseed there is that with my I get to play a bunch of Thalids, I get to play Spawn Writhe, I get to play a bunch of different things that make red or green tokens, and a bunch of, you know, hybrid or gold red and green cards to get the double counting going, and can really start to go pump out. And
I'm just waiting for you to say something really dirty, Eric. I'm just holding, I'm biting my tongue, just waiting for it to dribble out.
So. you basically, almost all the games end up in a swarm. So
that sounds like a fun deck, though.
Yeah, I think it's fun. I think it's pretty fair as well.
And I'll make mine pretty brief, but people, if they've listened to the show for a long time, they've heard me mention this. I've had one deck that in some ways existed in some manner of form since I first started playing Magic. Started out as this mono-green deck, and just over the years it's become kind of more of this mono-green artifact deck. So now it's called the Green Stacks. And this is purely a casual multiplayer deck. It'd be going to the Legacy format because of some of the cards it uses. But it just has a lot of fun with the bounce effects. Eric, do you know what a Millicus is?
Fill me in, Tom.
Yeah, basically 4 mana. During each player's upkeep, that player has to pay 2 life or return a permanent that they control to their hand. It actually got reprinted in the Kamigawa block as Blood Clock. Does the exact same thing. So you... So you basically have... 4 of each of these out there, so 8 may slow down your opponent, or they're paying life, and you're paying stuff that you like to bounce, like Wall of Wood, Wall of Roots, Rancor is not too bad, Deranged Hermit's the personal favorite, and Fists of Ironwood from Ravnica. That's one where it's a green colorless enchant creature. When it comes into play, you get 2/2, 2/1/1 green sapperling tokens. And also Wood Elves is another one that's fun. And one of the cards I discovered new for this deck is from 5th Dawn. It's called Possessed Portal. This is an 8 colorless mana artifact. It's a rare. If a player would draw a card, they have to skip that draw instead. So once this kind of comes on, it sort of locks things down. It also has a second ability. At the end of each turn, each player sacrifices a permanent unless he or she discards a card from their hand. And also then has the usual smoke stack. So basically this deck likes to pump out a lot of tokens and then uses those to pay off these different either bounce effects or sac effects.
Okay. Yeah. Well, that sounds, when you think about artifact decks, you don't generally think about green as an artifact deck.
So it's just one I've had around for a long time, and it just slowly gets updated here and there. And if I get a good rare, like I finally got a Rofalos, he goes in there. I got a Gaea's Cradle finally, it goes in there. If people don't like you, you will die very quickly. But it's just a fun deck that I've had around for a long time.
Cool.
Eric, do you know what's next on the show list here?
I'm imagining it's a listener email. Yeah, actually, Tom, I do have some emails I would like to talk about.
Do it, because I have a whole bunch of... We had a lot of feedback about the Dirty Magic art for cards that I missed, so we're going to talk about those. I also come up with a bunch of ones nobody has told me about yet. So be prepared for when I start talking about emails, Eric. It's Dirty Magic Card Art Hour.
I'll mute my headphones. I put a call out on Twitter for folks, you know, asking what kind of questions they want me to ask and stuff like that. And, of course, Hector, our big legacy supporter, got with me and said, hey, you know, these are the kinds of questions that I think you ought to ask on Legacy. And so I certainly did take that template and use it to go talk to at least Nick Marriott about Legacy. So there's I want to say thank Hector for coming back to me on Twitter and then following up with an email with a lot of different details. And then here's one more person who wanted me to put something in the show notes that I didn't put in the show notes, but because I haven't had a chance to review it yet, so I'm just going to put it out there. It's www.ertaislament. So it looks like ertaislament.com.
Oh, yes.
Okay. So he's a blog, and it's dedicated to all things pre-constructed in the world of magic. And to celebrate Arch Enemy, he's having a giveaway. So you can go there to the same address /contest, and you're more than welcome. He tells me I'm more than welcome to enter myself. Since I'm not a host on his blog, I can enter. But I already picked up all my Arch Enemy stuff, so I haven't checked it out yet. So, you know, if you're interested in pre-constructed stuff, you know, which, I mean, you have to admit, Wizards is getting better at pre-constructed stuff, go check it out. I mean, you know, he's thinking about stuff, so, you know, hey, always frequently is at least try folks out. It's always good to at least try out the new stuff that's going on. And that's it. Those are my emails for this week. So.
All right, well, this time, and I'm saving some for next week because we had a ton of emails after the last episode. So everybody, sit down, grab something to drink, potentially a small snack so your blood sugar doesn't get too low, and we're going to run through these. So first is Eric W. He said, great show. He says, I can't believe anybody hasn't brought up Octabi Orangutan for funny art. So I think this is one, if anybody's a newer player, they may not be familiar with this one. This came out in Visions, and this is what, if people mention the word sex monkey, this is the card that they're talking about. Or it was just a good card. It was a 2-mana that killed an artifact when it came into play for 3. But on the front was an orangutan. What made this card so famous was in the back, kind of right-hand side, it looks like there's these two monkeys butt-humping each other. I mean, there's no other way to take this piece of art. This became such an underlying kind of meme, is that when Unhinged came out, they actually had a another art by Una Fricker making fun of that card called Octabi Kong, which has a big Kong in front of it, but in the back you see the two same monkeys from the Octabi Orangutan card, but one of them is now pregnant. And the other one's kind of like rubbing its stomach.
Yeah, that's kind of funny. And you know, the sex monkey terminology has been kind of put back in play by Jamie Wakefield, who's writing for Star City Games again.
So good. So that's one of those classic ones that we have to make sure that we mention. Eric also says he liked having the video game chat as opposed to B-movies, and he wants a voice as the best game ever as being Diablo. Eric, do you play much, like, you were talking about just PC games, do you play like, any console games at all?
You know, with my family out of town, I've been playing X-Men Legends on the PS2.
Okay.
But, you know, I play a lot of games on the Wii that, you know, might interest my kids. I love the Lego titles, like Star Wars Lego, Indiana Jones Lego. I think those are some great titles and a lot of fun puzzle solving and just, you know, it's, I think probably the most genius part of those games for people with kids is that you can drop in and out without any ill consequences. So my kids can be playing, they can get stuck somewhere. I can drop in as the other character, help them solve the thing, and then drop back out and go back to doing whatever I was doing, and there's no ill effects to that.
And those are actually very good titles. I have the Indiana Jones one for the 360. And actually, my wife actually played it too, and she's not much of a video game console player, and she actually enjoyed that game as well. Let's see, Matt W., he writes in that we had from last time, Conley mentioned that Shining Force 2 is his favorite game of all time. Apparently, there's a lot of people that share that sentiment. So a lot of these emails are saying, hey, way to go, Conley. Besides eating $20 buckets of poop, you also like Shining Force 2. So they want to say kudos for that.
Now, Ricky Hayashi, he says that his favorite meme from our show involving Conley is baby powder, much over poop. And I have to agree. I'd much rather reference Conley powdering himself than the poo references. It gets a little over the top, I think.
Well, I mean, the baby powder one, too, it was real. Like, it wasn't like a joke. He's like, yeah, he used baby powder. And he's not the only person. A lot of people use this. I was basically the weird one that didn't know, had never heard of this for a television
and,
baby powder.
And he had his baby powder in tow, apparently.
Yes. Did he have it with him at your place? Did you get out the UV light to look for, like, baby powder traces around the house?
Now, I did not look for baby powder traces around the house, but an incident happened where it was mentioned that he was freshly powdered. So I told him ahead of time that he should bring the baby powder because it is hot and humid here in St. Louis.
And Eric, if you see like a mirror with like baby powder on it, that's not baby powder. Just so you know.
No, the house seems to be, pretty well cleaned, and there's no gamer stench lingering around or anything, so that's good news.
Matt also enjoyed playing Dungeons & Dragons and The Bard's Tale on the Commodore 64, and also gave a thumbs up to Leviathan as one of his first Marcel voices, too, as an old awesome card. And I actually put this up on the Twitter feed saying, in my opinion, Leviathan was the first Mythic Rare. I mean, I was around for Legends, but that was the first time I saw a creature and just said, like, oh my gosh, that is too big and too powerful to even fathom. And to me, in a lot of ways, that is what a Mythic Rare is. So Leviathan, there you go. Puck just wanted to say he's a Sega fan, and he wanted to mention that he really enjoyed Toe Jam and Earl, which I played for the Sega Genesis, and they were both from the planet Funkotron. I had to look that up.
Okay.
Let's see, Matt P., he sent in this kind of nice black-green mid-range control deck and also asked, have any of you ever gotten stuck on a particular deck when you're deck building or just gotten frustrated with deck building itself? And he said, sometimes you have a good idea, you get about halfway through with it, and you just get stuck in the quagmire of deck creation. And what are some ways to get around this? Do you step back, come back? Do you look at decks online? Maybe integrate a little bit of net deck technology? What do you do?
Well, I definitely have gotten stuck on things before, and this is what usually happens to me. I go pulling out cards for a deck through my monstrous collection, and then I go to start building the deck, and I now have 2 to 3 times as many cards as I need for the deck. Now, some of those are easy weed outs, like, I have 5 naturalizes instead of 4 or whatever, and throw that one off. But I almost always have too many cards for the deck. And I'm a big believer in building to the minimum card size allowed in the format. So even like casual, I try to stick to 60. And one of the things I recommend is sometimes you have these problems because your deck is too busy. You're trying to fit in too many themes or go overboard on some stuff. So sometimes you can break these things out into 2 decks if your problem is going overboard. That's something I like to do. The other problem I have is not getting in enough utility spells or removal spells to go along with my theme. So that's just something to be cognizant of is, how much can you trim out while going and putting it in. I actually think that starting to build Elder Dragon Highlander decks is a lot better in my mind just for the fact that I have more slots and I can only put 1 of each card in. So makes things a little bit better.
No, that's part of the fun. Let's see. Next, Gabriel H., he started playing Magic in Ice Age. And when they first started, this is the stories of how you play the game wrong when you first start playing. Is that what they understood is that that the rares must be the best cards. So they were playing cards like Bronze Horse and Glacial Crevices in every deck that they had. So that tickled me that somebody's playing a Bronze Horse in every deck that they had. So that card is terrible. And he also said their first tournament they went to was a PTQ in North Carolina, and he was playing Sly with a Special Wife Red, and again, they were only playing each other, they weren't playing the rules correctly, so he gets there, and this is around the time of Turbo Stasis, and he said just got destroyed at this tournament. He said instead of putting him off Magic, it actually inspired him to become a better player. So I thought that was pretty cool.
Yeah.
Thank you to Bobby. He sent in this very interesting 5-color summoning trap deck that had Eldrazi in it, Ionas, and 1 Nicol Bolas, the Planeswalker. So, thank you, Bob. I love when people assemble random decks. Douglas K. had an interesting idea about At some point, can we do maybe a little segment about looking back at the history of Magic? Like, say, where was Magic 5 years ago? Where was Magic 10 years ago? And basically it says is, you think this would be easy to find, but it's not as easy to find a little bit about Magic history. And I said that's actually not a bad idea. It just takes a little bit more research, and something maybe we'll try to add in sometime in the future. Or even maybe it's a kind of its own little offshoot of like a podcast or a video podcast. It would seem to be perfect for.
Yeah, I mean, I think a nice little history segment would be great. And I mean, if he wanted to even record it and have it be part of Monday Night Magic or whatever, he puts together a nice little tidbit. You know, we can always throw it at the end.
Yeah, good idea. Yeah, because we can easily add that kind of stuff in. Let's see, next, Bill B, he gets some amazing gamer street cred for me for playing the original Star Control. I mentioned Star Control 2 as being the best game of all time, which it is. And he played the original one, which was still really good. And I'm actually going to put down a challenge. I think there's all of us have one thing which I think we're better at that one thing than anybody else in the world. And my one thing is playing the one-on-one versus in Star Control, in Star Control 2. Where if you let me pick the spot the Eluder ship, I can beat anybody. Guaranteed.
There you go. Tom has thrown down the gauntlet. I would pick it up, but I won't be able to win. So we're looking for you, the listeners, to email Tom, set up a time, and someone, take him down. Let's see it happen.
Yeah, because anybody plays this game, you realize Spot the Eluder, that's the coward ship. It's a ship design. It's the fastest ship in the game. It really doesn't have any forward-facing gun. It has one that's really crappy. Its main weapon is it can like basically shoot out a butt missile. It just shoots like a little homing missile out of the back end. So basically you just are always running away from your enemy, and then you shoot them with this little missile. And you just whittle them down slowly over like 10-15 minutes. You win because most people then quit after about 5 minutes of playing. They're like, this is the most boring thing ever. This is Turbo Stasis as a ship-to-ship space combat game.
Oh, man. What makes Turbo Stasis turbo?
I think it was just Turbo Stasis is that you had all these things that let you draw more than one card a turn, basically Howling Mines.
Okay, good enough. Like Turbo Fog, gotcha. Because yeah, I have a Stasis deck built that I don't break out very often, but it's not so much of drawing lots of cards. It's much more of I've got some vigilant creatures in there, and then I've got like all the different cards that allow you to bounce Stasis to put it back on top of your library or into your hand. That you can do at instant speed, so you can, you know, get it back at the end of your opponent's step and keep them locked down while untapping all your islands.
And that's in some ways that's where the Turbo Stasis decks went, but they still would usually run away to draw multiple islands, or hopefully at least draw one island a turn to keep paying the Stasis, because you wanted to be way ahead when you reset it. Let's see, Mike B. I wanted to say Mike B's made an enemy. He says he's usually more of a casual player, so he usually finds himself agreeing with Tom, but he agrees 100% with Conley that Shining Force 2 is the all-time best gaming series in the world, in the history of gaming. He actually has a Sega cartridge. He even sent in a picture of his team of characters he has in Shining Force 2 to show me. That's how dedicated he is.
Wow, that's awesome.
Yeah, I was pretty impressed by that. Brad R., he wanted to let me know that I can contribute to Sci-Fi where they're having listener or viewer feedback on what should be their next made-for-TV B-horror movie. So I'll have a link in the show notes, but I'm definitely be participating in this.
Tom, that's made for you.
Yeah, I was pretty excited when I saw this. I'm not sure how I missed it, but thank you, Brad. Rich from England, he likes more EDH talk if possible. We tried today. And he also said he wanted to give kudos to the designer of Hellcarver Demon. He just thought it seemed to be a very fun card where you're flopping over five or six cards and getting out new permanents. It was just very random what you might get. He also has found Arch Enemy very swingy, which has been something mentioned before. Corey C., regarding Dirty Magic Card art, was shocked that we had not mentioned Ikundu Cyclops, which is Robert Bliss already had pushed the boundaries on a lot of his art. And Ikundu Cyclops is probably the one that most blatantly just has a big penis on it. It's in Mirage. It takes up basically about a fifth of the card art. And it actually looks like a female ogre riding the enormous penis.
Oh.
It's hard to... I think most people, if you haven't seen this, go find it, and you'll be like, yep, that's an enormous penis. And he also wanted to mention... You know, there's also another one made by Robert Bliss called Withering Boon, which just basically has this... looks like an overweight Ogre with just kind of big, saggy boobs. Again, on a Magic card art. Anthony M., he wants to agree that he agreed with Jack that Planescape Torment was one of the best of the three games listed. Let's see. Devin from Peterborough, Canada, said he would like to hear us not only talk about video games, but about B-video games. So he wants to start this off. He recommends Blasto for the PlayStation 1, and I actually remember this game. It was sort of a kind of a 3D shooter, and the character is actually voiced. He said it was a cross between Johnny Bravo, Superman, and Batman. It was actually voiced by Phil Hartman, and he had a lot of these weird quotes. Like, grab a mop, there's going to be guts on the ceiling. I'm a laser-totin' love magnet. It's just all these weird things. Like, yeah, it's just a very strange game. And I remember playing this for the PlayStation 1. So kudos to Devin. An anonymous listener from North Dakota emailed me saying that he's become very upset with Connolly's incessant North Dakota bashing.
Well, there's nothing we can do to stop it.
Yes, exactly. I did talk to him saying that we want to joke, but we also don't want to be mean-spirited. So there we go.
Yeah. I don't know that Conley knows the difference between those two things.
It's going to be a learning process. Nothing happens overnight. Al for Dirty Magic Card Art, he writes in about Grappler Spider from World Wake, where it's kind of front, part of its front leg looks very phallic, and yes, it does. Spider Demon with his weird hint to try to clean card sleeves with baby powder. I cannot verify this one. Use this at your own risk. James D., he writes an idea for a contest. He would like listeners to email in what they thought the artist card name was for a Magic card they've ever heard of, which I thought was pretty good. Victor S. in Puerto Rico said he greatly enjoyed episode 210. I appreciate that. And then Kevin C. sends in a new multiplayer format that I have described as being disturbing. And this is a format based off of the movie Human Centipede. So he calls it Planeswalker Centipede. So he said the movie Human Centipede changed his life, and he wanted to say thank you for exposing him to this movie. So the way this game is played, it's teams
of... I'm very afraid.
Teams of three versus three, similar to Emperor. One player is the head, the next is the middle segment, the third is the butt end. Players attack their matching segment, but if the opponent is dead, they attack the nearest opponent. Spell range is one. You take turns are taken one at a time from head to butt. But this one rule dictates the format. Whenever a permit would be put into a graveyard from play, instead is put into play under the control of your downstream teammate. So basically, your excrement becomes their dinner. So the idea is that the head feeds the middle, feeds the butt. And I said this actually be kind of interesting. It would bring up a lot of new strategies for this war. There would be a lot of card-sacking synergies that would really funnel cards down to the butt end so they could then kind of clean up the whole other side of the table.
Yeah, I think the way to run this format, though, is you get your six or however many even number of people involved in this thing, and then you randomly assign them to positions on each team, so you can't know ahead of time.
That would probably make it a little bit more fair, then.
Yeah.
But kudos to Kevin for a very cool new format based off of a terrible movie. Chad from Hawaii, he sent a link to a Flash game. I mentioned we are building a trebuchet this summer. And Eric, I know you said you got to see one launch at a Boy Scout camp.
Oh, yeah.
So we are building one. It's going to be on our design. The entire arm will be about 7-some feet long. It's going to be about 100. It's going to be a 90-kilogram counterweight. And so it's going to be able to hurl a 1-kilogram object roughly well over a football field.
Wow, stay away from Tom's house.
Yeah, so if you see me coming home with a sack of oranges, you should run and hide your car.
Oh, yeah.
Basically, our goal is the buddy of mine that's been with us, there's a brother that nobody likes in their family, and he has a deer stand where he often does things that are illegal. So we want to try to be able to hit that deer stand from the farm. So that's why we have this certain range that we want to get.
Oh, man.
Let's see. Justin B., he just wanted to mention he thinks Bloodthrown Vampire plus Pawn of Ulamog and Bloodgast works very, very well. He likes to combine this with the new card Overwhelming Assault. This is in the new M11 spoilers that we've had so far. In some ways, this is kind of the... I'm trying to think how you even... It's not really Overrun to me. So it works quite a bit differently. I'm trying to pull up the exact texture for you. I'm sorry.
It takes your card with the greatest power, and it gives all your creatures plus X, where X is that creature's power.
Yeah, and it gives them trample as well. So
okay, it does give them trample, yeah.
And that those are the emails. We have a handful of other ones. I'm going to save those for the next show because this one's getting a little long. But, again, we love to get emails. You can email me. I am pitimp@mtgcast.com. Eric, where should they email you at?
They should email me at eric@mtgcast.com. That's eric@mtgcast.com.
And as promised, I did my own homework to find dirty Magic card art, Eric. So we're going to run these down so people can look these up for themselves and tell me kind of which human piece of anatomy these resemble.
Okay, so first of all, Weatherseed Totem.
Yes, that was the one that was Weatherseed Totem that we mentioned before.
Okay.
That's what kind of got this all started.
Gotcha.
But I found there's ones that are much worse. And then I mentioned Eye of the Storm, which is my personal favorite for being looking like a certain part of the human male anatomy. Only it's interesting because it's looking at it from a different perspective than most things are. So, Eric, while I'm talking, you should look that one up.
You've actually piqued my interest, which I'm sad to say.
First that I have on my list is Demigod of Revenge. This is the pre-release version. This is one that a lot of people, it got named like the bondage penis, all these other different things. Because that's really what it looks like. The next one that I... So this is Demigod of Revenge, the pre-release version. Next, and this is from Eventide, is Cauldron Haze. And Eric, this is basically like a revisioning of the Octavo Orangutan. That one is a personal favorite of mine. Just because the one guy's like,
which was this one I was looking at? I had a storm. Oh.
Yes. Now pull up Cauldron Haze, which is also one of my second favorites. So I want to get your feedback on this one.
Cauldron Dance, Cauldron Haze.
Because it reminds me of the Octavo Orangutan art.
Okay, yeah, I see that. Except they're undead now.
Yes, but I think that one's excellent. Next is the Oriok Steel Shaper. This is from Mirrodin. And this is just one that's kind of like a big buff guy, but the way his little loincloth is hanging, it makes it suggest like he's the gigolo with the most below. He'd be sailing the USS Manhammer. Next on the list is Witchma Nephilim, just because it's just disturbing looking. It has no eyes, has a little skull, and it's very phallic in nature.
Yeah, the Nephilims are all kind of disturbing. The Sand Maw is the most disturbing to me, though. So spitting out all the little things.
It's not really the art, it's more the name is Power Taint. That one has always kind of just tickled me a little bit. Now, we mentioned the Kundu Cyclops. Another one is Binding Agony. That's another Robert Bliss one. That's probably one of the more famous phallic ones.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
And then last but not least, this is actually, somebody found that if you take the card Rexiel, the Risen Deep, is actually an anagram for Sex with Pale Reindeer. I found that on the MTG Salvation forums.
Yeah, okay. So I'm going to say that was not intentional.
Yeah, no, but that one I thought was very good use of the anagrams. So again, this was just for my kind of quick perusal. If you have more dirty card art for me to mention, please send it my way.
And for extra credit, make a dirty card art Rexiel deck.
Oh, yeah, that would be kind of like another EDH. Where all of your cards would be have somewhat... Oh, and there's another one that I've also forgot. I think it's called Spin Crusher is the other one that I have.
It's like the wheeled thing.
Yes, so try Spin Crusher.
Yeah, there it is.
That's basically like, in the future where the Terminators live, if they made... like a pleasure object, that's what it looked like.
Oh, God.
I missed that one. Arts. Actually, when I was looking through, I'm like, that one is fantastic.
Oh.
That is Robo Penis.
Yeah, all this means, Tom, is that if you take enough time to look at a piece of art, you can find something dirty about it. It's not really saying so much about the art, Tom. It's saying more something about you.
Boom, yes. Spin Crusher right here. All right. That is what I have for emails. We've gone through all our MTG Cast news. We are to the end of the show. Eric, do you have any last statements before we sign off on this one?
Are we looking for a contest entry, or are you just going to go ahead?
Yes. Send me some contest ideas. One we've had that fits well is create your own archenemy scheme card, but I'm also open to other ideas as well, because we have at least 4 prizes to give away. So do people want a creation contest where you have to make something up? Do you want to tell us about your favorite something story? Give me ideas for this contest. And Eric, you can give me ideas. You can't win anything, but you can send me ideas.
Okay. If I have an idea, I will let you know.
Eric says I'm very unmotivated right now.
Eric is very unmotivated. Eric's thinking about the laptop that's plugged into the audio recorder sitting on the kitchen table that is not going to be touched.
No, you either need to relax. You can go watch, you know, some sort of B movie just to relax, or you can actually go to bed, because we all know sleep is very important.
To keep with the phallic theme, I may very well watch The Watchmen.
Oh, there you go. Yeah, you got to see some big blue glowing neon penis.
Yeah. So I watched it in the theaters and really enjoyed the movie in the theaters. But it's been on HBO and I DVR'd it. And the thing is that I've been trying to watch it before I've gone to bed for the past, I don't know, three, four nights, you know, minus like Conley, you know, being in town. And I keep falling asleep because I'm too exhausted. So I haven't, you know, I keep getting a little further because I go where I fell asleep and then, so, you know, I may watch another 10 minutes and fall asleep.
You'll get there eventually, Eric. You'll get there eventually.
I'm such the old man now.
But Eric, you know, thanks for doing this. Thanks for telling us about, you know, the great time with the StarCityGame.com Open Series in St. Louis. I said it correctly.
Yeah, you did. Very good.
And hopefully, are you going to be more free now to be joining us on a more regular basis?
Yeah, I should be joining on a more regular basis. I guess the next time up is July 5th, would be next Monday, right? So
yes,
and so we may record on Monday, or you know, may record on Sunday. But my family will be out of town then for sure, so I can definitely make that week. And then from there, it will depend on what craziness we have going on at here.
No problem. Well, Eric, thanks again for joining me. Thank you, everybody, for listening. It was a marathon, but it was a fantastic show. And join us next Monday for even more M11 talk.
And this Friday for our super awesome, hot, going to impact more than one format preview card.
Exactly. So July 2nd, so basically July 2nd at 12:01 a.m., we'll be able to release our podcast and that exclusive spoiler card. And that's all we got. Because everybody stopped listening after they said we're not getting the spoiler card this week. So, Eric, have a good one, and I am going to end this right about now.
All right.